Live from the Ghost Hunter Store, brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paranormal Straight Talk. I'm Dave Giuliano, and to my right is Marty Haynes.
Hi, I'm Marty.
And we have a guest host with us tonight from South Jersey Ghost Research, Maureen Carroll.
Hi.
This is our first show on PowerX. We'd like to thank them for having us come aboard. And I'm sure we're going to have other little snafus like our intro playing again. What we're going to do, I'm going to give you like a little brief maybe bio on us, tell you a little bit about us, and then give you an idea what you can expect from the show. Where pretty much every topic is going to be covered. We decided that we wanted to go not just with ghosts, because we deal with that day in and day out, but we also wanted to go with some paranormal stuff like cryptozoology, UFOs, other things that we're interested in. Because we're more, you know, we're not as professional with that, we're more of a fan. So it would be interesting for us just to learn more about that anyway. Okay, I'm looking at the chat board. Hi, everybody. I assume you're hearing us now? Okay. All right. Like I said, my name is Dave Giuliano. You might know me from a variety of different places. I started the Shadowlands, which was actually the first paranormal website on the internet. Back when it was only news groups and black and white text on the World Wide Web, not even any photos. So it's been like 17, 18 years. I started it off as a place looking for people that were experiencing the same things I did when I was growing up and were still experiencing in the house I lived in. And trying to find maybe a little support group. And from that and people sharing their experiences on that website, I started with posting, you know, a handful of stories of common experiences, and I somewhere now in the range of 17,000 stories on there. Now, you might know me also from South Jersey Ghost Research. I'm a director there. We'll talk a little bit about them a little later on. And also, I run the Ghost Hunter Store, which we're actually broadcasting live out of the storefront of. Marty, you want to give a little bit of history?
Hi, I'm Marty Haynes. I'm one of the assistant directors for South Jersey Ghost Research. I am also a medium and a Reiki master and an angel intuitive. I do readings out of the store, and I work here with Dave.
Now she's one of my, I guess, how long have you been in the group, investigator?
5 years.
5 years. Mm-hmm. Maureen, how long have you been in?
Since 2006.
Okay. So you guys have both been almost the same time. Maureen was one of our people that booked our lectures and some of our cases in the historic locations and things like that. So she can give us really good insight on maybe how to contact places. People, we get that question quite a bit on how do we go about finding a place to investigate. And the first thing I tell them, or it's a new group saying, hey, we're looking for places to investigate. First thing I tell them is the plan that we do when we help historic places. We'll contact a local historical society. Mm-hmm. We'll say, hey, any places that we can investigate, and in exchange we can do fundraisers or lectures, things of that nature. So they're allowing us places that we may not normally be able to get in, and we're getting in for free. In exchange, we're also doing some community service by, you know, helping them out and doing some fundraisers. If you got more, Maureen, you could probably add more to that than I just did. I just gave a little snippet.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. I used to contact people, or people would contact us asking us what we would do, what we would be able to do for them. And the first thing I would do is, you know, ask to meet with them and explain who we are and what SJGR, South Jersey Ghost Research, who we are, what we do, and what we would be able to offer them in the way of fundraisers. And one of the first things that I always make sure to tell them is that with respect for the location. We're not there to cause any damage, any harm to the people there, the spirits there, to the...
Right, that's important for them to know.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And when you're dealing with a historic society, a historic location, it becomes so important for them to know that you are going in with respect, that you respect the location, and that you appreciate the antiques that are there and the history that's going on in that location.
Yeah, we actually have a place that we do every year. I guess will be the 12th year this year, Gabriel Davies Tavern. It's an old tavern from the mid-1700s that was once used as a field hospital during the Revolutionary War. We've investigated it quite a few times throughout the years, and that's how we got in there originally, by agreeing to do a fundraiser for them, which now has wound up being their most successful one, annual fundraiser, and this will be our 12th year. I think we've missed 1 year because of rain, that was it, mm-hmm. or maybe two mixed in there. But we also do some other... events there, like Sleeping with the Ghosts, where we have people come over and stay fairly late into the night, and we use our investigation.
Pretty popular one.
Yeah, that's a nice thing where people who maybe don't know anything about this, they just know what they've seen on TV or curious, they can go and do an investigation with people who know what they're doing in a safe environment. But in that location in particular, with the respect factor comes up.
Well, one of the reasons that we had to cancel that and due to rain, everything takes place inside the tavern, but when people are lining up from outside, those floors are the original floors from when the tavern was built, and to have 200-400 people bringing in wet muddy shoes, that's not showing any respect for the location. So we want to make sure that no damage is occurring, just so that we can have, you know, a successful fundraiser. That's not successful for the location if it's damaging the property.
Okay, and we also do the we take into consideration the ghosts there. There's spirits there that when we were first doing it, maybe the first 5-6 years even, they, by the end of the night, you imagine 400-500 people walking through that building. People walk by, they tend to touch things, and they were all personal belongings of the past two owners. They would get a little upset by the end of the night, and you could feel the, I don't want to say anger, but I think it probably that's the best word for it. They were very upset and very angry by the end of the night, and it would definitely affect the people that are people that were up there the entire time, walking through with the guests. We basically, with the second floor would be where the bedrooms were, and we do a mock investigation where we have all the lights off, and we let them use some of our equipment and walk them through the dark for, you know, 20 minutes at a time. I think the past, you know, 5 years or 6 years going back, I think it's when we really took that into consideration, and we actually go in now in advance and we talk to Mr. Shuck, and I know we usually go into what was his bedroom and sit there and say, hey, we're going to make sure no one touches anything. We're going to make sure we do this in a respectful way, and everything we're doing is for the house, to keep it in the state it's in, to help them raise money to, you know, keep the upkeep of the grounds. And ever since then, we've definitely seen a difference.
Yeah, we give him the option to talk too. If he doesn't want to talk, we let him know that, you know, we won't push. And he tends to like that too, you know. And by the end of the night, I think he usually does start talking to some people and letting them know that he's there.
I remember the last night, or the last time I was in there actually talking, but it was the last year that we had a problem there. Things had stirred up so much, we stopped using one room because people were going in there and they were just feeling the energy. It was just a little too strong, and I think things were getting moved. Some of the closet doors were opening up and hitting people because they were standing in front of it. Mm-hmm. So I went in there and I shut the door and I sat down on the trunk by the bed and said, hey, you know, we're not here to show you any disrespect. We're doing it as a fundraiser. Explained everything to him. I said, is there anything that you want me to do? And the doorknob turned and the door opened up wide. And I'm like, okay, you want me to get out? I get it. So that's what spurred us to, you know, treat it a different way the next year around. And like I said, ever since then, we've had no problems. That reminds me of a paranormal tip of the week, and this is going to be an ongoing theme that you'll hear from the show, is this week's tip will be, drum roll, you get to leave at the end of the night. The people in the house or the historical building or wherever you are have to stay or come back to work the next day. So whatever you do to stir things up, like provoking and other things that are, you know, ill-advised, you know, you might not see the consequences because you're only there for a limited amount of time. But the people that live there or work at the locations, you know, they're going to suffer the repercussions and any fallout from your actions.
Yeah, because time over there means nothing. So, you know, it may not happen the minute that you do it. It may happen 2 days later, and the people that are there don't even realize what exactly was done to make this happen.
So whether you're, you know, whether you do this as like for fun as a hobby, or you're in it for the scientific aspect of it, or you're in it to help people, or even if it, you know, there's people out there, it's the thrill, it's the rush of doing it, and you're just maybe on an event doing it one time here and there, you still should keep this in mind, because people don't understand that there's different kinds of people, or different types of groups or investigators out there. They lump us all into one category. So you may be a fan of this field and go out and someone sees you in public doing something related to ghost hunting. They don't know that what you're, you know, how deeply you're involved or not. Whatever you do, if it's something that's, you know, sketchy or makes ghost hunting look bad, you make the whole field and all the other investigators out there look bad. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind, that you, when every action that you take that can be scrutinized, which it reflects on us all.
Look back on cemeteries, how hard it is to get into a cemetery now because the kids go out there or other people go out there and say, you know, we're going out to investigate, and they go out and destroy things. And then when the investigators truly go out to investigate, we're not allowed into them. Exactly. Because somebody else has already destroyed something.
Which is classic for Gettysburg.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's a lot of places now that we used to do a lot of cemetery cleanups, and that's coming back now, where we're doing more and more. First of all, it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But originally we started doing it because we were getting the blame for doing not us in particular, but ghost hunters or paranormal researchers. We were getting the blame for the vandalism in the cemeteries, simply because we're the weirdos out there late at night looking for dead people. It couldn't possibly be the kids that would be hanging out there and drinking anyway. They wouldn't do anything, you know, like vandalize or knock something over or leave broken bottles or anything like that. It would be the ghost hunters. Because I know one thing I usually carry in my equipment set is empty glass bottles.
Yeah.
Because I like to leave them around at various locations.
In your little kind of desecrated grave handbook.
Exactly. So, but we never got taken seriously. I've even done rebuttals to different newspapers and stuff that have written, you know, blaming ghost hunters. And never once has it ever been printed as a rebuttal or, you know, an opposing point of view. They just kind of ignore it and laugh it off. I think now that ghost hunting and paranormal research is more mainstream, I think now this has become more of a community service. And actually, we just got involved with a cemetery up in Trenton. And I was unable to make it the weekend that we did our first cleanup. But from what I hear, they were the people that were responsible, or the owners or the caretakers, were very, very pleasantly surprised. And I've seen the before and after photos. So if you want to take a look at them on the South Jersey Ghost Research website, it's hauntedhelp.org. Or you can look us up on Facebook. There's pictures there. It's night and day. I was shocked at the before and after pictures of how much we got done in the weekend. It was real. There were stones laying around. It was covered with leaves. You couldn't see the grass. Mm-hmm. And we cleared a good, like, I think a quarter section of the cemetery off, and we're scheduled to go back two more times. Mm-hmm. All that we're doing with the knowledge that we're doing that in the name of everybody else in this field. Because just like when you do something bad, if you do something good in this field, it's going to reflect well on everybody else too.
Sure, it's a ripple effect. It'll branch itself out.
So those of you you know, starting out or looking for ways to get into locations, try the community service aspect, helping the historical societies look for a local cemetery, and the word just spreads from there. Those people will tell people, and that's how you wind up getting into private houses. I think almost every historical society that we have helped out or belong to, we've gotten cases from that. And that is a lot better than trying, you know, to create a fancy website, you know, trying to, you know, network and get all the social networks. Yeah, that helps across the internet and across the world to get your name out there. But locally, it doesn't have that big of an impact. You have to do stuff on the ground in your community. And the cemetery cleanups are a perfect idea. We go out for a few hours, pick up some trash. We do one in Philadelphia, too, the Greenwood Cemetery. We go out and help them. And it's a matter of picking up branches that have fallen down across graves for a few hours and raking up some leaves. Mm-hmm. They feed us.
Yeah.
You know, so we get lunch out of it. We go out there. We help them. It's for a good cause. And the word of mouth, just from that alone, wound up getting us into Benjamin Rush's farmhouse, the Grand Army of the Republic Museum,
right.
The Frankfurt Historical Society, the Friends School, mm-hmm. all in Philadelphia, and numerous private houses from members who told members and told family members that all lived in the area. I mean, that exponentially, that just the very first cleanup we did at Greenwood probably resulted in private houses and historic locations, probably about 15 to 20, from spending a morning cleaning up in a cemetery. And I think that really doesn't... people don't think of that, because they don't see that maybe, or when you read a book on ghost hunting or you watch a TV show.
They don't show you that aspect of it.
Yeah, we don't all have producers and we don't all have teams out there looking for places. You have to focus on your local areas and get your name out locally.
Yeah, and have to keep going. You can't just go out there once and say, hey, you know, can we do this or can we help you? Because, you know, they'll say, well, we'll have to think about it. We have to talk to so-and-so. Keep up with it. Be persistent with it, exactly. You know?
I think that another good way that people over, or another good way to get your name out there locally is the libraries.
Yeah.
Everybody has local libraries or county library systems. We do, normally the whole month of October, almost every weekday, we do a free lecture, which we've put together a PowerPoint slideshow that's about 20 minutes. We converted it to a video. We play that, and then we do questions and answers. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. People are blown away by that. We give them all the information we want them to take home in our slideshow presentation. And then they have the other hour and a half just to, you know, bullet us and, you know, hit us with questions, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. We fill the rooms pretty much every time we go out.
Right. And it's your opportunity to... even if it's 5 people, if it's 50 people, mm-hmm. instead of just talking to one person or relying on one person to randomly surf your website and find you, you're reaching out and touching and communicating your message and about your group and selling your group to people that are local to you face-to-face. It could be 50 at a time.
Right. And people are more willing to contact you for help if they know that you're going out there just to help them even listen, you know, answer their questions.
Yeah, people don't realize a lot of different things, how hard it is for people to contact. We think, especially because those of us that are really computer savvy or the younger people that grew up, they don't know a time before the internet. So they think everyone just shoots an email out. And it's that simple. It still takes some guts and some, you know, some confidence to take that first step and be comfortable in telling people that you have unexplainable events going on in your house.
Yeah, to admit that you have a problem.
Right. Admit you have a problem. And also to say that you're scared.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things we have as humans is a problem admitting that we're afraid of something. Yet this is what they have to do. And they have to do it to complete strangers. So when they come to these lectures, they can sit there and they can listen. And normally what happens is, at the end of the night, you are bum-rushed by you know, half the crowd. Because now they want to tell you, they may not ask their questions in front of everybody, but they have private questions they want to ask, and you take the time to do that.
And I always like the first statement. You might think I'm crazy, but...
Exactly.
And I go, well, I just stood here for an hour talking to you about this stuff, so I'm pretty sure you're not crazy.
And the fact that we go into strangers' houses in the dark...
Yeah, for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And have no explanation as to where we were.
Right. I mean, if that doesn't qualify as crazy sometimes, I don't know what does. So, I mean, that's the pot calling the kettle black kind of. So, hey, Doug.
I tell my clients, hey, I can believe quite a bit. Just lay it on.
I just noticed Doug's chatting in the chat room. Hey, Doug, how you doing, buddy? Sorry I didn't take your call. I was busy trying to set this up.
We want to thank Doug for hooking us up here so we could get on Parax.
Yeah, we appreciate it. It's Doug McReynolds from Ghost Soldiers. You definitely want to check out their shows, and you definitely want to check out their website. Good bunch of guys there. And we'll definitely have to have Doug on as a guest soon.
Yeah, so get it together with us for us, Doug, all right?
Because he's got some good stories to tell. And while we were talking about the how hard it is for people to contact us, there's another few things that will make this like a learning radio show too, where we'll go have a little classroom time. There's things that you have to keep in mind when you're dealing with clients or people that are contacting you for help. One of the first things is remember that we're strangers to them. We're doing things in a whole field that's the science and the understanding of it is often questionable and looked down upon or looked as a joke. So when they're contacting us, just that's going to increase the anxiety significantly.
Yeah, no ghost in a jar.
Right, exactly. Whatever you can do, though. Yeah, it was a church bell. I forgot to shut my phone off. Someone's texting me. Anyway, going back to what I was talking about, I totally lost track there. Anything you can do to put them at ease, basically. We usually show up. We show up in t-shirts and jeans. I mean, basic street clothes. I know when the first people I ever had try to come out to my house for help showed up in suits and briefcases, and it was very
scary.
It was scary. They were scarier than what was going on, and we realized that we were going to be more or less. They were going to be observing us. They weren't going to be helping us. So you want to put yourself on the same level as the people that you're going out to help.
Yeah, we don't go out with a lot of equipment the first time. We go out and just sit down and talk to them and calm them down and, you know, get a feel for what's going on in the house and a feel for them, and then let them know how things are going to work with the next step.
And that's going out to meet them. First of all, a lot of people do it in neutral ground. That's fine. But we always go in pairs, or at least two. Obviously, it's a safety issue. You have to have, at least two. I was going to say
count.
Two or three, and then pairs and two. That's the same thing. I'll do my hash marks. I need my calculator up here to count that high. A lot of the things are dual purpose. They're safety and they're helping the people too. When they have two people to talk to instead of one, so instead of it's one weirdo coming over, it's two weirdos coming over, you know, who want to sit in their house in the dark and help them. The other reason you want to go into other people go into like meet them at neutral locations. You might want to go to the house instead, because the first visit is basically to go over what they claim is going on, and review the answers they've given you if you've done like a questionnaire beforehand. But you also want to see how they are in the actual environment of the house that they live in, where the activity is. That's just as critical. See how they react to different areas and do a walkthrough. So if you meet them in a house and set up we usually go during the day or, late or early evening. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's normal hours. It's not really late. We don't go with any equipment. We go in at least two people. We sit down and we have maybe an hour, a long conversation. Depends on how much people like to talk. We have some talkers in our group that can, talk your ear off, like Maureen. She might spend 2 or 3 hours chatting about with the people.
Those are always 2 hours.
But if that's what it takes to get the people to, be relaxed and comfortable with us, that's all that matters.
Right.
And you can definitely see that. When you go back for the investigation, the people that they've talked to or the people that they've met on the prelim and everything, they definitely bond with, because they go right to them. And some of the people I know that I've done prelims for and been involved with the cases, I still hear back from every now and then, or I still check in with, because you just made that connection with
them.
Marty alluded to this one too. Another thing to remember about the people who contact us for help is that they're going to be afraid that we don't believe them. Now, they're taking a huge, huge stretch, a leap of faith to come out and say, hey, I'm afraid of this, or this is what's going on in my private house, to strangers. So when you go in, and it's okay to look for natural causes, but when you're asking questions, you don't want to ask questions like in the negative,
right,
where you're asking if it could possibly be this or could it be that. that's up to you to figure out. But if you relay that to the people, just by the way you ask the questions of what's going on and the way you react, you could, in one sentence, you could be calling them a liar inadvertently or making them think that you don't believe them. And from that point on, no matter what you do, you can't help them.
Yeah, they have no confidence in the fact that you're going to even try to find out if it's a haunting. You're just going to try and prove that it's not.
So one word I find, you know, that is a trigger word is debunk. If you're going in a private house, you're not debunking. You're going to try to find out what's happening.
You're investigating.
You're investigating. You're researching. The whole word debunking just drives me crazy because it's most people don't understand when it was originally used what the intent was anyway. When someone I know it was used on some TV shows, and the intent behind it was to say when something was debunked, it meant that they didn't find any haunting activity during their investigations, not that the place was not haunted. Or it was never haunted.
Or they just found a natural source for that one item that was going
right, on. Not everything.
Right.
It's quite common to find natural sources for one or two things, but when you have other things that aren't explained, you have to either account for everything or assume that there's something else going on.
Right.
When I meet with clients, the very first thing that I will sit down and tell them is that we're going to be discussing their questionnaire in more detail. And any questions that I may ask them is not because I don't believe you. It's just that if I ask questions in different ways, it may trigger a memory and you'll be able to explain.
Sure, and get better clarification. And sometimes, sometimes, like you said, it triggers that memory of, oh, yeah, well, this happened. So, you know, and that really wasn't something that could be explained away, you know, so
right.
Definitely.
But I always clarify as soon as
and
I
that's,
meet my client.
And that's the other thing of walking people, you know, being in their home, is if you walk through their home, as you walk through, even though you sit at do the questionnaires, they don't always remember things until after you walk through their house and they hit a room and they go, oh, I forgot this happened the other night. Or, you know, something happened to my daughter the other day here. You know, it kind of triggers that.
And that's one of the key pieces of this interview when you're dealing with the people. You have a few pieces of a puzzle you're trying to put together. The more pieces that you have, the more likely you're going to be able to figure out what's going on. People, and in the most case, they're not doing it intentionally, just don't realize what we would consider as being important to the case.
Right.
Some things they leave out because it didn't make sense to them. They couldn't do the tie-in. So the more we can get them talking, the more they open up. We might start out with a one page of notes from an investigation, just from the initial questionnaire. And then you wind up with, like, you know, five or six at the end that they've elaborated on. You know, that's a lot of extra information that people just don't think to write down or don't know exactly how much detail to go in. And then sometimes you do get people who maybe are too afraid to tell you certain details. And certain details might be too personal. But believe it or not, in my experience, after doing this for, like, you know, 25 years about, I find that people are more willing to tell the truth about personal matters, their relationships, their sex life, their drugs, their drug habits, their drinking, but they will lie about using the Ouija board.
Yes.
they will constantly lie about that. And then when we're doing a walkthrough, you know, we open a closet door and there's a Ouija board sitting right out there. And it's like, oh, what about this? And they forgot. It's like there's all their coats, their car keys are hanging right on top of it, or, you know, they have, like, their wallet sitting on top of the box, but they forgot they had it. So it's like, it's weird people, you know, will remember conveniently and forget conveniently, but, you know, you are trying to put together a puzzle, so you can't always assume that they're going to be as upfront, intentionally or unintentionally.
I actually had a client once who didn't want to tell me everything because they thought that if we knew all the details of what was going on in their home, that it would scare us off. And so they tried to just downplay everything that they could. And it wasn't until much later, after we had been out and investigated and we really helped them, that they were like, oh, we didn't want to tell you everything that was going on because we were afraid you wouldn't
help us. Come back,
I see Rusty made a comment about it's very hard, if not impossible, to convince the person they aren't haunted. Yeah, that's very true. But what I try to do in most cases is not tell them that they're not haunted, is to convince, when people are saying, like, I'm being attacked, we need you to come out. immediately. And we go there, and I try to use humor as much as possible because I want to do something to break the ice. And I'll have people, they'll say, okay, well, I was standing at the top of the steps. I felt hands on my shoulders. And I say to them, why didn't they just push you down the steps? I mean, they had your hands on the shoulders. You're going to be off balance. A little shove, that's it. You go flying down, you break your neck, you're done. Now you're a ghost too. You know, and they normally look at me and start laughing a little bit or look at me like I'm crazy. Either way, you know, a few more comments like that get them to realize, okay, maybe, you know, they say a glass flew across the room and broke on the other side of the room. Well, if they could throw the glass across the room, why didn't you throw it at your head? I mean, that would be an attack, not throwing a glass across the room. To me, that's, look at me, I'm trying to get your attention. So if you can diminish the people who think maybe they, you know, my basis of what was going on in my house was based on what I saw on TV and the horror movies I watched. So a lot of people still have that basis, and that's where the fear comes from. If you can reduce the fear, it might not be necessary to do much more than that. You don't have to convince them they aren't haunted, especially if you can't prove one way or the other, which it is almost impossible to do anyway. I just saw another comment on there. Let's see. About going to random or going to abandoned places. Don't most folks, that's Kat. Don't most folks start out by going to abandoned places, seeing for themselves what's out there? First of all, that's what a lot of people do. More people don't do that anymore simply because it's illegal in most cases. Even though it's an abandoned place, in 99% of the time, someone still owns that property. And it's probably going to be, you know, trespassing. So that when you jimmy the door open or just being on the property, if you jimmy that door open or you remove wood to get climbing through the window, you now are vandalizing too. I'm a former police officer. We have a bunch of police officers in my group. I've always taken the stand that really get a permission to go in some place. There's cemeteries, there are public places, historical places that you can do. Don't go to abandoned places for safety reasons, but for the legal aspect of it too. Via the Shadowlands, I get people sending in photos quite often saying, here I am, we're at the old asylum. And I know that place is, you know, off limits, it's abandoned. So they had to break in to get there to trespass, and they have pictures of each other. The first thing I do with those pictures is I email the local police and give them to them, along with the emails, which is the confession that they went out there, and the photos are the evidence of them inside the building, because that gives all of us a bad name. Not to mention, someone eventually is going to get seriously hurt and killed, so I'm doing them a favor. But when they get caught, and they get caught trespassing, and it makes the papers, sometimes it gets picked up nationally or regionally, it doesn't say vandals or kids caught trespassing, it says ghost hunters. Ghost hunters or paranormal researchers or whoever, whatever tagline they want to throw on it, and that means all of us. So though he made us look bad. So whenever I get the opportunity to discourage people or, you know, or I see someone gets caught, you know, I post that article all over the place because I want people to get the message to stay out of there. There are enough places everywhere to go because spirits can be found anywhere. Look at your local legends. That's kind of why I started the Haunted Places Index on the Shadowlands. There's thousands and thousands of places, and yes, some of them are urban legend and rumor and, you know, and myth, but some of that started maybe based on some little bit of truth.
Sure.
So going out and checking that area, maybe there is something to it. Just try to get permission as much as possible and be careful and safe where you go.
And there's places out there that you can go during the day that know that they have spirit activity, and they'll let you walk around and take pictures and do EVPs during the day, and you pay, you know, $5-$10 to get in. Mm-hmm. Instead of that $100, you know, to do the ghost hunt at night, you're still going to get activity during the day. Now, we all know that.
That's a perfect thing. This is something new now. The newer technology. We have you have the full spectrum cameras. You have the modified infrared cameras. You have the other cameras like the Bell and Howell and some of the other ones that do infrared. And you have like the Sony cams. All of these now enable you to go during the day and take photos. One of the biggest reasons we used to do stuff at night, besides it's more convenient for us and for the people, is that all the infrared technology we use, the video cameras, our regular cameras, we needed the darkness really for the contrast, mm-hmm. and to use most of the infrared equipment. That's not the case anymore.
Right.
Now, we're not using night vision scopes as much, which rely on complete darkness so you don't damage. These cameras can all be used in full light, full daylight. So, like Marty said, you go out to a place that you may never, ever be able to go in. They're never going to say it's okay to go in. Like the National Park Service really doesn't let anybody in most places. Mm-hmm. But during the day, you can take a $5 or $10 tour someplace,
yeah.
Take your recorder with you, you take your new full-spectrum or digital camera with you, you know, and take an EMF meter with you. Walk around, and you're doing an investigation. You know, ghosts aren't around just during the night. They're around 24/7.
Yes.
We just only notice them more at night because we're all laying down, it's quiet, not much traffic.
And we're focusing on them.
Right.
So you can focus on them during the day. I mean, you know, the different forts and stuff you can get to, the prisons that are around here that let you in now and just to do a self-guided tour and off you go.
Yeah, we talk about places there. If you're in the area where the store, we're in Mount Holly, New Jersey, a lot of you may know of the Burlington County Prison Museum. I did that with South Jersey Ghost Research back in 1999 when they were turning it into a museum. We were actually called out to help the workers there because they were experiencing stuff when they were trying to convert it over to a museum. And ever since then, we've been out on numerous TV shows on there. I think all the big shows have done, you know, episodes, you know, plural from there. Mm-hmm. And they have, I think it's Wednesday through Sunday tours during the afternoon.
Yeah.
That's I think it's under $10.
It's $5 to get in.
And so $5, you have access to all the cells. And to be honest with you, some of the areas are still dark. There's not lighting in all the cells. So if you need that little bit of darkness just for, you know, atmosphere or mood.
That place is creepy in the daylight anyway.
Right, so, I mean, now, the other one is in Philadelphia, out by the airport, Fort Mifflin.
Yeah.
Again, another one. We were on the History Channel out at the fort. I know... a bunch of other, I'm not sure how many of the shows have been out there, but I know at least one other show has been out there. And then the Travel Channel has been out there, other mm-hmm. places like that. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of TV exposure for the fort. They're open during the week, too, for just regular tours. I think that one may be a little more, that may be closer to 10. But you have the run of all the casemates, if you go in the casemates, it's pitch black. Smush, we'll get right to you. Oh, that's a good question. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
But let me finish. But Fort Mifflin, it's for $10, you could spend the day, and you're going to get more activity than you would at night. Because most of the reported activity that's been reported over the years, the documented sightings, are during the daytime hours. So you're actually at the right time when the stuff's happening the most, and you're not limited by the equipment anymore.
The guide.
Yeah, the phantom guide that gives tours. He looks and acts like a real person, and then they go to thank them for such a wonderful, you know, reenactor out there, and there was no one there that day. So that's another great place to go. And both of those places have websites. You can get more information about them. Now, the question I just was referring to is... Can you scroll back to that, Marty?
Yeah, I'm getting there. Here, what's the most dangerous thing that people can imitate when they see it done on TV?
Provoking is number one. Not because just it's you going back to you get to leave and you leave whatever you stirred up.
And it's disrespectful.
Yeah, it's disrespectful to the living and the dead, but it's dangerous. My challenge was out there from when we first started this show, and so far no one's taken me up on it. If you want to provoke, that's okay, but let me take you to a location of my choosing, and I'll even tell you it's going to be a bar in some, you know, seedy part of the city, and blindfold you and put you out in the middle of the bar and see if you'll ask the same questions in the same tone that you would when you're in an investigation. See how much you want to provoke there. Because I guarantee you're not going to like the consequences of doing it with humans and living humans. Just because the deceased don't attack you or for the people that are on TV that think getting scratched is cool. Getting scratched, first of all, if that's cool, then we can talk to you later about your strange fetishes. But
we have a good psychiatrist for you.
It's inappropriate. It's not professional. But you are teaching everybody out there, many who think or use the shows as the basis of their knowledge on how to go about doing this, that that's the right thing to do. And it's not. You know, someone is eventually going to get seriously hurt, and it does happen.
Yeah.
There are dangers involved in ghost hunting. The people who tell you that there aren't are either naive or they're lying.
Yeah, they will follow you home. And, you know, human spirits can attach just as well as the negative spirits. So you provoke them enough, and they'll want to follow you home. It's just like talking to human people when you walk up to them on the street. You know, you don't walk up and start, you know, pissing somebody off. You walk up and talk to them and say, hi, how are you? It's nice to meet you. But, you know, spirits are humans without the hard shell. So you want to respect them too. And especially if you want them to talk back to you. You start making somebody mad, they're going to walk away. Or, like Dave said, harm you and then walk away. So, you know, then you're not getting any evidence at all.
Now, I'm kind of a latecomer to watching a lot of the TV shows, because it's like, I do this daily, and we're always doing cases and doing so much ghost stuff that when I go home, I don't want to watch TV shows about ghost stuff. But now, I guess it's more like on-the-job research. I've been watching more of the shows just to see what people are talking about.
Yeah, and you got to be able to answer the questions at lectures, you know, when people say, I saw this, or, you know.
Right, so I've seen a wide variety of actions, and I've noticed that there are differences. There are shows out there that do not provoke, that are respectful, and that, yet they still seem to get, you know, activity too. I mean, if your whole basis of activity, instead of getting an EVP, is you got scratched, I'd rather have the EVP, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's better evidence. And even if you just run down the sign thing, you can analyze the EVP. You can't analyze your scratch. I mean, there's known conditions that spontaneous scratches can appear. Mm-hmm. It could be even to something that's in the material. You got scratched on something, an irritant. I mean, anything, an allergy. I mean, that would be easy to debunk or throw out as evidence, the scratch. But the EVP, at least you can analyze, see what falls in the range of human voice or capabilities and things like that, what frequencies it's on.
Then you can determine whether it's a residual or intelligent because it's answering your question, or if it's just speaking randomly. You know, right.
So instead of running around yelling at things in the dark, well, you know, sit down and ask questions instead. And you might be surprised with the answers you get. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. I get more upset about provoking because I know the dangers involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we go probably about a third of our cases that we handle a year wind up being cleanup cases, which means we've gone in after either groups or homeowners who have made the situation worse. And one of the biggest things that they do is the provoking. And they've seen it on TV. Now, I don't think anybody here or any of the listeners out there are going to go watch like This Old House or anything like on the Home Improvement Network and watch the guy tear a roof off and put it back on in 60 minutes. And then go out and tear your roof off and try to put it back on, too.
Yeah.
You probably didn't learn everything you need to know on how to do it in 60 minutes. Well, it's the same thing with ghost hunting. You're not going to learn everything. You need to read. You need to talk to people. That's where these communities are great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the social communities, even on Facebook now, where you can connect to people. There's always someone who's been doing it longer and knows more than you. And there's also people that have been doing it a lot less that know more than you, too. And you have to be willing to accept that.
Yeah.
You have to be open-minded enough that you realize that there are no experts in this field and we're all still learning. And be open to that. But, you know, don't just put all your eggs in one basket and learn off of what you see on TV. I mean, because you wouldn't do that for anything else at all.
Yeah, well, they brought up rituals, too. And, yeah, they do the rituals on TV. But, again, they don't show you the entire ritual. And they say they don't show it to you so that you won't try and do it. But in essence, what happens is they don't show you the whole thing. So people go and do what they show you and end up in big trouble too.
Yeah. Right. It's the whole Ouija board mm-hmm. thing where it's, is there a safe way to use a Ouija board?
Definitely.
Yes. Will I tell you how? No. Because me telling you how doesn't mean you know how to use it safely. And Ouija boards wind up accounting for a large majority of demonic cases that are out there because either people inadvertently didn't realize how sensitive they were, or they were opening something up, or they do it intentionally for, you know, for the fun of it.
Right.
So there, it's just like everything. There are proper ways to do it, but you just shouldn't show people a little bit and expect them to, you know, take off with it. That show, by the way, is now airing on another channel.
Yes.
They got picked up. It got canceled originally because of the rituals. And they were also, would they bury one of their members alive, too?
Yeah.
Because no one's ever died from that, really. I don't know how many magicians out there
have lost
their lives or almost lost their lives because, you know, just the basic physics of it, the box cannot hold up the weight of the dirt.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know,
you're in there, you panic
attack and, you know, suffocate or have a heart attack because you're panicking, you know, that, any of that, right?
You know, and then the other one was the blood ritual, right? Where they were cutting themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good thing for, you know, primetime television, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's just irresponsible, again, and it's sensationalizing the field, but it's irresponsible of, the broadcasters and of the people involved with the show, because
people
are going to mimic that, and that's exactly why they got canceled the first time.
I even think when they show seances and stuff on TV, they don't show the opening of a seance, and they don't show how to close down a seance. So they leave that centerpiece there, and people just emulate that, and, you know, you get all kinds of stuff going on.
Let's see, what's some of our other things here, some of our little tips. Make sure after you go out and meet with the people, or even from the initial contact, when they contact you for help, that you stay in contact with them. That's one of the biggest things we hear about from people that contact us after they've dealt with someone else. Either they never got a report, or they never heard back from them, or they contacted them and told them what was going on, and they talked to them once and then didn't hear back from them. It's like these people dropped off the face of the earth. It's like some of them probably realized they were in too deep but didn't want to ask for help. Other people, you know, they probably aren't really serious about it. This is a hobby, so they shouldn't really be going into private houses then. Regardless, by just sending a little email saying, hey, we're still here, we're going through our notes, we're going to set up a date with you to come back out. Just keeping them apprised of the situation and possibly giving them something to do too. Like tell them to keep a journal. Log in when events happen from now on. And log in a date and time and anything else that they might think is important. That way, when you come back, you'll have a journal and you possibly can see a pattern. But it also makes them proactive in their own help. Mm-hmm. You can't help anybody unless they're going to be willing to help along. The best we do when we're dealing with any kind of case, whether it's a negative case or just a regular case, is we give a prescription. We give them, here's what you can do to make your situation better or livable or tolerable or coexist, however the people decide they want to go. There's only so much we can do. It relies basically on the people themselves to follow through.
They have to do the follow through. If they don't, then it comes back and, you know, usually comes back worse.
And yeah, that's one of the biggest things, I think, that one of the most disappointing things probably about dealing with the negative cases,
mm-hmm,
is that in most situations, someone in the household's probably done something to, whether they did it on purpose, and usually it's not on purpose, but they accidentally jump-started something they would never have jump-started had they known the consequences. Yeah. But whatever the actions they were doing to start that, they may be willing to give those actions up temporarily, but I'd say probably in a majority of the cases, over 50%, they wind up eventually going back to that behavior or that action. There's another good question just popped up. How do you distract clients who seem to get obsessed with the activity? You know what? Sometimes I try banging my head against the wall real hard in front of them because it's just like talking to a wall with some people. Yeah. There's just certain times you're just never, ever going to get past that person.
You can distract them sometimes by just turning it around and getting them obsessed with bringing in positive energy into the house and, you know, really making everything totally different and obsess them on that side of it so that they don't follow through with the rest. But sometimes it just doesn't work.
Now, you have people too that they don't realize basically how this stuff works. The more focus, the more energy you put on the spirits in the house, good or bad. For this conversation, we're talking about normal spirits, say. The more energy you focus, the more recognition you give them, the more energy you're also giving them too. So you're enabling them to do more, interact more. And if that's not what you want, you're accomplishing the opposite. People come into the store all the time and they want to buy equipment to investigate their own houses. And we always make sure they take one of our cards along with them for South Jersey Ghost Research, because they will be our clients shortly.
Well, actually, we try and talk them out of buying.
Actually, we do that too. I'd rather not sell it the stuff to somebody who I'm ultimately going to have to go out and help them now with the problem that they created with that stuff. We don't investigate our own houses. I recommend no one investigate their own houses, because you will not react to things, say EVPs that you get. It's easy to tell someone else that the EVP that you recorded saying get out doesn't mean get out. We're getting a snippet of a conversation. It doesn't say the person's name. They didn't say what to get out or what to get out of. Like maybe they want you to get out a deck of cards so they can play poker. Mm-hmm. You don't know that. You tell people that, they laugh a little. Now they feel better about the get out they heard mm-hmm. or you recorded. If you record get out in your own house, you're not going to buy your own psycho babble. Yeah. Trying to explain it away. You're going to hear the voice now is going to transform into the Amityville Horror voice of get out. And that's all you're going to hear. And because we're only human.
They do scare themselves.
And right. You're going to have to sleep there. You're going to close your eyes in the dark in your bed. It's completely different than when you're dealing in someone else's house. Even with the store, we had a problem on the third floor. Because my group is here, we're based out of the store too. We had another group come out to help us with it, because I felt that my members and me and Marty were just too close to the situation. Right. This was like a second home for us. Right. We have to go up in these rooms and we open or close in the dark and walk around here sometimes by ourselves. So you don't want to get that whole freak out thing going on, So.
And there are people that thrive on the negative attention, the negative energy. Because they just want the attention, because it's now they're important. Something's happening to them, so they can say the oh, woe is me, or somebody's got to look at me. And we get to the point where we'll go as far as we can go, and then we just have to step back and say, this is the best we can do for you. Now you have to follow through, or we can't help you anymore. And that's a tough situation to walk away from a case that can be fixed if the people will help themselves. I think that's one of the toughest things to do.
Kat on the message board here asks, is it bad taste to refer to a totally unreasonable client or to refer a totally unreasonable client to a really bad team that thinks everything's paranormal? You know what? It sounds like it would be an easy question to answer, but actually there are times where a different or a fresh outlook or a completely different look, however much you disagree with it. Now, it might be someone you think is a really bad team because everything's paranormal, but maybe that's the kind of ear or that's the kind of person that they need to communicate with, the clients, that is. So while you may be going about it in a totally straightforward way, that's just not getting through. After you've talked to them, maybe seeing the other team too might click something, seeing how they overreact to stuff.
Yeah.
It could. So, yes and no. Certain clients, definitely, I've referred to teams that I just thought might give them a fresher mm-hmm. look at it, or a totally different look that was completely opposed and opposite of how we would look at things, because I thought that they would communicate better and understand better.
And sometimes when they get the same answer from two different people, that helps them understand that they really need to pay attention.
What do we think of the ovulus?
Well, I actually have the PX.
Yeah, I have the PX and the puck.
Yeah, I think it's a neat theory. I'll take it into historic buildings, but I will not take it into Klein houses. But in theory, it's neat, and it's kind of neat to sit and listen to. Gets a little monotonous after a while because it repeats and repeats and repeats. But I think they got something going there. I just don't know how far they should go with it.
I like the whole theory behind it. I like that it's reading multiple sensors at one. Yeah, it's reading, mm-hmm. what, two EMF sensors, voltage, temperature, and I think there's another sensor in there too. And the spirit would have to manipulate all of them to produce a word that's aligned with that specific mm-hmm. combination.
And we've got some decent stuff off of them.
What I found more impressive was actually one time with the PX. Bill Chappell and DigitalDowsing.com, mm-hmm. if you're interested in finding what his latest project is. I actually got a word that wasn't in the dictionary that he sets up. All the obvious, the PX, the puck, they all have a specific, I think the PX is like a 2,500 word dictionary. And if you have it in like just the word mode, phonetic mode, it's, or not phonetic mode,
dictionary
mode, it's just going to use the word. Phonetic mode, it will take, you could actually get words that aren't in the dictionary because it puts syllables together.
Right.
But in dictionary mode, you shouldn't get a word that's not in a dictionary. And I actually got my dog's name,
mm-hmm.
and we were pretty sure it was my wife's grandmother.
Yeah, Karen, you're right. I absolutely do pick and choose. There are certain places that I won't take it into just because of the negative energy maybe that's associated with the place. But there are some places that I take it, you know, where it's not negative energy, it's just spirit energy, and to see if it's residual or not, you know, that kind of helps out. But like I said, I will not take it into a private client's house, absolutely not.
Just keep this in mind, guys. When you're using something like that, whether you're using the PX and asking questions, whether you have dowsing rods in your hands or a pendulum and you're trying to communicate, anything that you're trying to communicate, you don't know exactly who you're trying to communicate with or who's answering for sure. You're not checking ID. You know, there's no way to verify who you're really talking to. In you know, short words, you're using something very close to a Ouija board. So you're walking that fine line. We do it when we do EVPs. We don't know necessarily who we're talking to, so you want to be careful of what you ask for or how you ask it. One of my favorite things I saw on a show recently was someone say, can you do something to let me know you're here? Now, I know if I was a ghost, you know, me and my, you know, interesting sense of humor, you know, I may do something that they probably wouldn't like, you know, but they know I'm here then.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave it open-ended like that. So because we don't know exactly who we're talking to, certain locations like the historic places or places that maybe well-known ghosts, well-known hauntings,
right.
Places like that are better. You use these items there as opposed to in someone's house. Because sometimes there's spirits that are there that aren't interacting with the people in the home. When you have a haunted home, that means the spirits in the home are interacting with you. Yet there are plenty of houses that have ghosts and spirits in them,
right.
But may not be haunted. The same thing, there might be other spirits in that same house that aren't interacting, just only certain ones are. But when we go in, the other spirits may start interacting with us. So we may be talking to someone completely different. And you know, we keep the same personality you had in life. So you might get, instead of the, you know, their aunt that, you know, used to live in the house, instead of getting her to talk, you got the, you know, the jerk that used to live in the house too, you know, two or three owners back. And now he's saying stuff just to stir things up, or just to be funny, which should the owners hear coming over the PX, the obvious, they're not probably going to take it the same sense of humor that he is. And you're going to have a harder time explaining that away than you would an EVP. Because this has got such more theory and science behind it that they're going to see that as a validation of what actually is coming over as something real. And they've seen it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in a house, too, where it seems like they've had like almost like a spiritual pathway. They never got the same spirits traveling through. And, you know, like they would have the same spirit that would stay in the house. So if you're using the ovulus or the puck and you're getting someone who's there that night and then they're gone, you know, but the homeowner hears what's coming out of the unit, you know, why are you going to freak him out for someone who's just kind of passing through? You know, if you get someone like Dave. So.
Yeah, very true. Everett, we'd like to thank you for listening to our maiden voyage on Para-X Radio. We're going to be here every Friday at 6. Everyone in the chat room, if you want to hold those questions and come back or email us, we're going to make a list of ones that we're going to answer because we like to do that too. Have just where we go down a show of all questions that have been submitted. And we're going to have some guests. We're going to start booking them too. So stay tuned and stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.